Welcome to That American Football Show, powered by EP Sports. EP Sports is the top supplier in the UK for all your American football needs, helping players and coaches reach their potential since 2007. Check them out at epsports.co.uk. I'm here with Joe and Tim. Craig's not with us today. He's feeling a little bit ill. And we have some special guests tonight, Jonathan Rooney and Mick Tyler from the UKFL. Evening, guys. How are you doing?
Good evening to you. Yeah, well.
So thanks for coming on. Do you first just want to introduce yourself and let us know kind of what you are about with football in Britain?
Yeah, I'll go first. Jonathan Rooney. I started playing in 1999, started holding the chains in about 94 or so. So I've been around the game for quite a long time. I finished playing 10 plus years ago, but I've been mostly probably well known as a coach, head coach of Durham Saints at the moment in Bucks Premier North. Have coached GB youth and junior. And I'm the director of football operations for UKFL, so mostly focused on player recruitment, coach recruitment, league rules, the kind of commissioner role at the moment. Decisions that are made with respect to football, scheduling, venue, stadia, that type of thing.
Okay, what about you, Mick?
I'm Mick Tyler. I'm the managing director of UKFL, and I really look after the business side. I consider myself to be a football fan. I've never played a down. I've never coached a down. I've stood on many sidelines in the cold. I've stood on many cold lines. Sidelines in the warm as well, and I've been working on this project now for 3 years almost, since we actually had the original idea. It's developed, you know, through streaming to what it is now, and we took advantage of lockdown to progress it even further because we felt the time was right.
Okay, so do you want to let our listeners know, like, what actually is the UKFL? What's your plan? Yeah. What do you want it to be?
It's going to be a professional league in the UK. So surprisingly, even though the NFL plays multiple games here now, there's talk of an NFL franchise, has been for some time. It's probably going to happen in the next 10 years, we guess. Britain is the only major European country that doesn't have a professional league. And one of the things that really, am I allowed to swear on this show or not?
Oh yeah, go for it.
Pisses me off is when we see all our best talent go to Europe to play. You know, if you look at teams like, probably the best example recently is Leeds Beckett when they won the championship. The very next year, three or four of their best players all went abroad. You know, and the reason they went abroad, if you speak to them, is because they have no opportunity to get paid to play football in the UK. And to me, that's a crying shame. And we've been streaming games for the last 2 years as UKFL, a year before that as Vikings TV. And we did that really just to get some eyes on, you know, because generally teams don't stream. You get the odd playoff game and finals, but generally regular season is nothing. And we wanted to develop some sort of fan base and some sort of interest in the game. And then when lockdown came, we took the opportunity to just develop it a little bit further. And, you know, so for instance, we sat down every Friday in my place and we slogged out, you know, how many teams and what's the thing going to be and how we're going to do this and what we're going to do here. And we went live. We did a soft launch. It wasn't really a proper launch and we still haven't done a proper launch. We did a soft launch Super Bowl week because we wanted to take advantage of the focus that the Super Bowl brings to the media. And we did a promotional video, which I'm sure you've all seen around the market, which, you know, we paid a lot of money to have done. And we felt was okay, you know, but we had the feedback we had was just, what's the word we would use, John? It just knocked our socks off. You know, we were expecting a little bit of negative feedback because it's Britball. You know, that's what people do in Britball. And the most negative feedback we had, the biggest thing that people picked up on, was the map that we showed of where the stadiums were going to be, that people were saying, well, there's nothing in Scotland, there's nothing. Well, it was a generic map. You know, it didn't mean anything. We still today haven't decided where the teams are going to be. We have a good idea, but we're going to base it on some key criteria, you know, which we can talk about later if you want. But that was the main thing. But we had, we only put it on Facebook to start with. I beg your pardon, we put it on LinkedIn to start with because it was an investor video. And then we put it onto Facebook and we just had so much interest and so many people asking for feedback and asking for information, you know, players, coaches, sponsors, investors, media. You know, I think this is, sixth or seventh show we've done now, John? It's got to be, hasn't it, between us?
Yeah, and it's about the 20th we've been invited to. You guys are lucky.
Yeah.
You got a good show, so we thought we'd come on.
Yeah.
I think the other thing as well, like, referencing to the soft launch, we knew that there would be people that go, oh, I've heard this before. Because you know what? People have, I'm going to say, tried it before loosely. I don't think making a Facebook group and making a bold claim about something is actually trying it. That's a different point. But people have tried it before. And so people who are a bit more dyed in the wool, like, oh, I've seen this, what's the difference, blah, blah, blah. Is this someone trying to rip us off yet? You know, usual type of stuff. The biggest thing about the soft launch was getting out into the community and talking to people who could bring things to the table. So I've had multiple conversations with people playing abroad and to talk about the lifestyle and what would bring them home and what's good about being out there and what they would miss if they came home now and what we need to provide. That's the obvious connections that we knew would be out there, but it's things like we've got to know 5 or 6 people in the social media world that are Britballers that do incredible stuff for their profession, but no team can possibly afford them. But actually, we're seeing now a showcase where there's going to be a paid position for our social media that is admittedly small to start with, but has the potential to grow. And for someone to work in social media or in American football, like, and be paid to do so in this country, is quite a huge opportunity. And just meeting people in the community who are unbelievable with CRMs, people in the community who are great at HR, people in the community who are great at marketing. And actually, since the launch, we've more than doubled the size of the team because people in the community have come forward and said, I believe in this, and here's my skill set. How can I help? And that's allowed us to form some new business connections that maybe we wouldn't have. So from our perspective, the soft launch blew us away and did exactly what we wanted. We wanted to let people know it was going to happen. We weren't ready to field team name questions, what colour people were playing in, exactly what locations are ready in. But we wanted to say, look, in 2 to 3 years' time, this is going to happen. And if you want to be on board, now is the time to be on board. Because obviously, you know, anything early adopters usually end up with more success out of it. So we've been able to form some great links across the country that, with it being a little bit of a Northeast baby because of the natural connection that brought us together, the natural off-field friendships and business that we've done before brought us together. We needed to get people in different locations and all around the country. And that's where we are at the minute. We've networked well, we've reached out to people. The ripples have been felt abroad, in Asia, in the US, and it's going as well as we hoped, really. And yeah, blown away by the positivity in the Britball community, which is, you know, as we have mentioned, quite a pleasant book of the trend, I guess.
I think Mick answered my next question about that map. I was going to ask you where that bottom left place is because it doesn't look like any population centre I know. So you've mentioned, obviously, you've not got any specifics about the teams, but do you have an idea where specifically you want? Because originally your plan's going to be 8 teams to start, isn't it?
Yeah, so we've done some research on demographics and, you know, we can bore you with the statistics if you want. We've identified 12 what we call regional areas. Mm-hmm. Which are roughly equal with people. So there's 66 million people in the UK, and we've, you know, sort of done it by postcode so that it's some areas are this big, some areas are this big, because you know they're more densely populated. And we won't, we'll take 8 of the 12. Now, the next question I'm sure is going to be, well, how do you decide which 8? And primarily it will be judged on the stadia, because we want the stadiums to be right. So we want our game day to be a Wembley experience with a smart, slightly smaller version.
Yeah, and I think what's key about stadium is it's not just bricks and mortar, it's the people. So in speaking to the chairperson and speaking to the owners, you get a real sense whether they want you there because they can make money or they want you there because this is their potential future brand. And to be honest, it's night and day. So sometimes we approach a region, we earmark 3 stadiums, we have a conversation, and it's just percentages of bottom line and how many people can you guarantee in week one. At this stage, we're not sure. But we meet some stadium, and we're talking Premiership rugby clubs, Division League One football teams, that the chairman is just like, this is our summer plan now. We're going to do X in winter, this in summer. We'll host your events. Can we, you know, can we be your marketing for it as well? Because we've got all this different structure. And, you know, there may be some choices down the line that come. You go, oh, well, why is there a team here but not here? Well, because we found people who love it and we found people who want to make it the actual part of their state. We don't want to rent a stadium. We want to be a part of what that team, that company, that group of sports teams that play there do, to become a fixture of it. You know, we want season ticket holders for Premiership Rugby to have the chance to come across and watch American football in summer. It makes sense. We want it to be partnerships, not just renting the stadium out. Renting stadiums is ludicrously expensive, as Baffer have found out.
So talking about partnerships there, so if you, for example, I'll use where I'm in Edinburgh, if you had a team in Midlothian, what would your relationship be with the Wolves? Would you coexist with Wolves? Would you take players? Would you use the Baffer team as a feeder league team?
Yeah,
how would that work?
It's a great question, and it's a difficult one. The last podcast was on was right in the middle of the Six Nations, and that was the best way of explaining it. Okay, yeah, congratulations. The Six Nations is on a yearly basis is the pinnacle of world rugby, right? It's all eyes on, it's on the media, you know, massive support, back page every day, you know, it's big. And yeah, some people who play for Saracens, some people who play for Bath, some people who play for Glasgow don't play for the club for 3 months. Because the Six Nations brings eyes, money, sponsorship, glamour to the situation. And we're actually, even though we are going to have a league with a very high standard, it's going to be quite early on in the Baffer season. So we're looking at May, June, intense, and finished up by mid-July. So there is going to be a period where, you know what, some players are going to come and choose to play for us. We fully intend and fully want to release all of the players with no problem about them signing, you know, deals elsewhere. In fact, you know, we would be more than happy to say we're borrowing a player for the first half of the season and then releasing them to the Baffer teams with all that extra experience, all that extra S&C, all those extra coaching connections, playing at the elite level, and then going back to the Baffer team for the business end of the season. Is it perfect? No. Baffer teams are going to have, at first, that first season when the couple of star players are missing for the first game, it's gonna affect them. It is, like, we can't beat around the bush with that. But it's going to affect the Premiership teams the most, but quite equally. You know, everyone's going to be picked.
The other side of that, John, just to cut in, is if they're a good enough player, they may go to Europe to play anyway, so they wouldn't see them at all. Whereas if we're giving them the opportunity to play in the UK, they'll stay in the UK.
Yeah, and you might get someone like, someone who's abroad, like right now, is a fantastic player. Someone like Ashley Bailey. Any Brit Ball team would be, you know, absolutely blessed to have him. Well, because of this league bringing him back home for the first half of the season, the second half of the season, he might play for a Bitball team. That's no promises. He might get a second half of a deal somewhere else. And ultimately, in that first season, there's going to be that difficulty when we adopt it. But what are Britball teams crying out for? Eyes, fans, money, sponsorship, reduced costs, equipment, quality venues with partnerships where finals, games can be held at a reduced cost because business has already been done there, you know? So if we completely dress a stadium and, you know, we're putting in professional goosenecks, concreted foundations into every stadium, like we're not just going with the rugby posts and making it work, well, that stadium will be ready and available for other teams to use. And can deals be done over the next few years where if we have an Edinburgh UKFL team, that when that finishes, and let's say it's a wild success and we get 10,000 fans, okay? Are 2,000 of those fans going to stay around for the next week's games with the Edinburgh Wolves? Maybe. You know, and so eyes on could pay off almost immediately. But one of the big things we want to do as well is use our paid players on a year-round basis to be available for things like JAG Tags, UK Duke, school-based programs, so that we can introduce the game at a level and a width that hasn't, you know, JAG Tags done a fantastic job, but with our paid player and paid coaches, we could double that instantly. And we could start having 9 to 11-year-olds, 9 to 13-year-olds experiencing flag football in school, which 4 to 5 years later will pay off in the youth clubs. We absolutely want the BAFA teams to be the pillars of their community. And we want the UKFL teams to be the professional, high quality, you know, the sizzle bit, the moment of just absolute light in the fire under the community that everyone goes, wow. And then the rest of the community can kind of, you know, it's cheesy, but a rising tide raises all boats. You know, if we raise the standard, we get better players in the country, we introduce the sport to more young people, young families, family game day experience, and they say, okay, I now want my child to play. Where did they go and play? The BAFA clubs. Absolutely. We would love to work with them. Absolutely.
I think you've hit a nail on the head there about losing British players to Europe. Dale King, who's been on our pod quite a few times, friend of the show, he's been playing in Germany, he's been playing all over Europe because he can't get paid to play in Britain. So you're losing quality talent like Cadell to other countries.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cadell might get drafted by CFL and for play to him and unbelievable. He might last 2 years in the league. He might last 10 years in the league. I hope he does. But he might just miss out and he might need one more year of playing and he might come and play for us. And you know what? He might stay around for a BAFA season as well, because are you going to go and sign somewhere else for 2 or 3 months? He's clearly got the talent to do so. But one of the things about UKFL with these players is it gives them the chance to put roots down. It gives them the chance to start careers. It gives them a chance to start families without being this roadman, road warrior, living out of a suitcase, city to city to city, having a wonderful experience. Don't get me wrong, that Euro experience we won't eliminate entirely because the weather's beautiful, the scenery's beautiful. Going living in a foreign country is a thing you want to do. But once you've done it for 12 years, you've missed out on 10 to 12 years of your career. And actually, when all your mates are in jobs where they're middle management, senior management, director level, and you're coming back and starting your own, you know, entry-level job because you've actually gone on this 10-year holiday, that's a factor as well. And so some players, absolutely, we hope within 5 years will be able to propel themselves from our league to leagues where it is not just a living wage, it's a phenomenal career. We generally have that as a goal. We hope that happens. But for everyone that makes it, there'll be 5 that just don't make it. That's the way the pyramid works. And by giving a league out here, we hopefully can allow people to start a job, start a career, train 3 months, intense period, you know, go back, do a good bit of work, start building up a resume, start you know, producing a life, paying off a mortgage, you know, rather than just paying rent. It's there's a lot of factors in this. Like, bringing British players home isn't just about slinging a ball around a park. It's about bringing them home for home sake, you know, so that they can really set up roots.
And on the kind of converse of that, we were talking about the new European Football League last week.
Yep.
Do you think that the launch of that is going to either positively or negatively affect the kind of recruitment of players?
We'll see. I mean, are they still saying they're playing in 2021?
I think that was the plan, wasn't it, Tim?
I mean...
Yeah, they tweeted out today that the league starts in 10 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, if this league starts out with what they're promising in 10 weeks... The production values have been superb. I can't knock a single thing about them. They've got some quality people involved. They've got some unbelievable stadia. They've got some unbelievable teams. It looks great. It looks absolutely great. Good luck. I could not with good conscience say the Durham Saints are 100% going to play a competitive game of football in this academic year. Because they're not. And I'm not sure we'd be going to Spain on a pre-season tour this year. So if they've found a way and they've got their full accreditation for international travel, we've seen the problem with like Championship rugby. They've had some issues with the team in Jersey and the team in Cornwall and stuff. And we've seen some issues in the Super League with Catalans that have been sorted. But they're established professional leagues. So, you know, really best of luck to them. But if I was a betting man, I wouldn't be surprised if it was rolled back a little bit. But if it is a success, which, you know, like I do hope it is, because I want to see European football on TV. I want to see these players shine. If the league is as good as the GFL playoffs, for instance, in consistency across the board, which it is saying that it's going to be maybe better. It would undoubtedly be a massive competitor, but at the same time, it would just raise the bar on what we need to do to be the best league in Europe, and we want to do that within 5 years. So if that involves, at the end of our playing season, we put together a UKFL all-star team into their league, because I'm pretty sure if they're a success, they'd want a British team in there. I'm not sure.
We're not allowed in anymore.
Pardon?
It's a European league, so we won't be allowed in anymore, will we?
Europe is a state of mind, Mick. Not just but yeah, you know, like I'm pretty sure it would be great for them to have a British team in there. I don't think in the current amateur model that the BAFA runs, the British teams run under, teams like the Warriors, Tamworth, they've really maximised that model. You can't find much better coaches than Tony Allen and Jason Scott.
I don't think the talent's the problem. I think the money would be the problem.
Yeah, and exactly. That's what I mean. Like, so if you're not paying the players, how can you fly them?
It's the cost of getting them to games.
But,
to play in
the European
League. Yeah, it just wouldn't happen.
If you're not paying the players, how can you expect them to have Monday off work and play on a Sunday night in Spain? Like, that's a big ask. And so... If the European League of Football is a stunning success, whether it's 2021, whether it's 2022, and it's something that is successful and people want to be a part of and want to build towards, I've got nothing against it. Undoubtedly, some players will go there, some players will go to here. But as I've seen with the Bucks transition, there was a point when only Durham were bringing in American scholars, and then other people in the Prem started. Now Division One teams are starting. Now Division Two teams are starting because of ambition. Once you start doing something, the eyeballs turn. And once the eyeballs turn, you sign more and then more and then more. And so we've had messages on LinkedIn, we've had messages on Facebook from players who'd never considered coming to Europe until they saw our video. And actually with our marketing budget, with our media budget, with our PR advertising budgets, we are hoping to reach a much wider range of players than has been reached before. And it really is an economies of scale. If the ELF is a successful league, it will bring more worldwide eyes onto Europe and the potential to play here. You don't need that many good players to make a league.
Just to put a cap on this one with the Alfie. The one thing that when we speak to any Americans that want to come to Europe, we have one massive advantage that no other European country has. And that's we speak the same language. You know, the number of Americans that we've had conversations with that go and play in Europe, but don't have any social life, or can't have a conversation with a teammate because they don't speak the lingo. You know, let's not underestimate that. That is a massive, massive thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And so
I was going to ask you about where you're going to get the players from, because I did a little bit of research today and looking at the BAFA's records from their AGM. I was actually surprised how many registered players there were in Britain. I thought, you're going to struggle to fill two rosters of eight teams, but you're not. Looking at the numbers, it was 4,091 registered adult players. So you've got a pretty big pool of players. I think that may not include uni players as well.
Yeah, it does. There'll be some crossover.
Yeah. Would you use any imported American players, or was your plan to be majority British?
It's both. I mean, we are 100% going to bring import players in. There are, at this stage, you know, we're talking with investors in different brackets with different investment capabilities that could mean that the league could end up looking in one of two or three different tiers of how many. And we believe there is an absolute need to bring in import players. If you look at wide receiver play, I think there are, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 plus stunning wide receivers in the UK that could contribute to a very, very exciting game. If you draw up the list of quarterbacks, I don't know if you get past five. Yeah,
that's where you struggle.
Yeah. With defensive backs, we have some unbelievable defensive backs who can absolutely contribute. But I don't know if we've got 16 absolutely class safeties. You know, have we got 8 absolutely class safeties? For sure. But could we supplement the safety position? Yeah, we could. You know, how many really high quality linemen do we have? And I mean, big, athletic, you know, we've seen Keanu Ibanks from Hull just do the CFL combine. Guy's a monster, you know, 6'7", 320, runs a 5'4", 40. Like, that's an actual offensive lineman, you know. He's not just a fat dude. And he's an athlete. A lot of our best offensive linemen are just big, hefty dudes that have been dormant, tough guys, slobber knocked for 25 years and are still going. Some of our absolute legends in O-line are some of our, you know, more O-line. So there are certain positions where we feel we could massively boost the pool. Have we got enough running backs? Probably.
I think the advantage to looking at it like that is if, as you spoke, with kind of the grassroots building up in schools and stuff, which we're really behind, we're really into that. But say, because this, like you're saying, the safety, quarterback, these are all really high IQ positions. When, no offense to the position, wide receivers and running backs, it's a bit more go and get a touchdown. You obviously have some intelligence behind it, but when you're a safety and you're reacting to everything going on, it's a lot harder than acting to it. So if there is that younger base of players coming up within like 5-10 years, you'd be hoping that would be a reduced impact, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the goal is to pay British players. The goal is to pay our best players to stay. That is absolutely on the cards. I imagine in the first year, sadly, we'll be underpaying the Americans for what they bring, and we'll be overpaying the British in some ways. But I desperately hope that the British crew come out and prove us wrong, and that they prove that they're worth every penny, because we wouldn't be taking that risk if we didn't think so. And I would say that if we had a 45-man roster, a minimum of 5 imports and 15 to 20 players on a paid contract, supporting them from mostly the UK with, you know, let's not forget that we go to Europe for a holiday. But if you're a Finnish offensive lineman who's 18, 19 years old and going to have a gap year before they go to uni, why wouldn't you come and live in Edinburgh for a year or London or Manchester? And, you know, you've seen the Premiership on TV, you've seen the Champions League, you think, oh, you know what, I could go live in Manchester for a year. I mean, they might find out about the weather and the rain when they get here. But that, you know, I'm going to go for a gap year and play. It's not just limited to British players. Some, you know, German, Finnish, Italian, Austrian offensive linemen's heads are going to be turned. Maybe I could go and live in London for a year and see what it's like. Because our culture shift to go over there is a similar culture shift for them to come over here. Now, we have the negative gradient of weather, but we're in May, June, July, so we've got the best shot, you know. We've got the time when it's actually fairly reasonable.
Knowing it ain't too late.
Yeah, and so, you know, even if we landed the dream ticket and The Rock just phoned us tomorrow and said, you know what, I bought the XFL and I want to buy you guys and here's 20 million quid to set up the league, we absolutely would commit to paying British players a wage that they could live with and play with, because that's the right thing to do in a British league. And not just because it's the right thing to do, because there are players, you know, Glenn Tuga, Goodell King, Ash Bailey. There are loads of players out there that can absolutely play this game at an elite level. You know, on the thing you mentioned, you are so right about the intelligence of playing free safety. It's one thing to play free safety and to read it when the ball is in air for 2.5 seconds. But when the ball's only in air for 1.5 seconds, the game changes massively. And you've got to ask yourself how many British safeties have got genuine years of experience facing a lasered arm QB. And it's not many. It might be one game a year you play against a really good QB. It might be two games if you've got a good QB in your division. But quite a lot of the QBs in the Premiership, in the middle to lower teams, are converted wide receivers who are doing a hell of a job in leading the team. They've got the football IQ, but they are converted quarterbacks in their 20s. There's only so much you can pick up and ingrain deep inside your psyche and your performance when you start doing something so skillful and so wisdom-based, like quality of experience-based, when you start it in your mid-20s. And that's sadly a fact. We need younger players playing football. We need younger players. Like, our quarterbacks who are 14, 15, 16 need the opportunity to throw to world-class receivers to realize how far and how fast you have to throw it to actually make it. It's no good throwing a fade to a five-second wide receiver and then saying, oh, I've got a great deep ball. You've got no clue. You've got no metric of what it's like to throw to a 4-4 guy. And that's where we've got to shift everything. And unfortunately, you know, we've come to the decision that it's going to be too difficult to do that if you keep the game strictly amateur. So there's only one option.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Going from like the fan side of things. So I was speaking to Mick before this, you know, I've never played, never coached myself. I've just always enjoyed the sport and watched it. You talked about the fan experience quite a lot and in the video that was a big thing. I mean, for someone like myself, you know, I sent it off to all my mates and I've just gone, this looks quality. Let's get on the beers and when it gets going, we can go support our team. What sort of ideas have you got going to create this atmosphere?
Well, we want to try and replicate as much as we can within the budget to an NFL game at Wembley. Or an NFL game in the States. You know, we want to do tailgating.
Yes.
We're talking currently with a fantasy football company so that we can provide stats and that fantasy football. So people can buy in, you know, not just during the season, you know, when the season's finished as well. I mean, where are the stats in the British game? Another bugbear of mine, you know, this is one of my high horses that I sing from. What is the point in playing British football? Because, you know, John's mentioned he was a player for many years. What were your stats, John? Where are they?
No idea.
exactly. So, you know, other players in the States, even you know, if they play at college level or even high school level, they, you know, there's a history of, you know, this guy did this and this guy did that, and that's what it's all about.
And you know the stats are fundamental because they lead to so many other things. You know, how can you have an article discussing who's the best QB in the country when you don't know how many touchdowns any of the QBs have scored?
Yeah, you are right, you know.
Yeah. How can you have, we keep trying to make media, and you guys are doing a great job because you're having real discussions about the things that are happening. You actually want to put it to paper and you want to write an article? You want to have a Monday morning quarterback or a Tuesday morning quarterback equivalent? But you're just like, well, this guy won. Some bad QBs win football games. Some great QBs lose football games. You know? How many teams in this country record most of them count the touchdowns for QBs now. We're at that level. But how many people are looking at completion percentages? How many people in an analytic standpoint are looking at completion percentages in certain situations? How many people are using EPA as a basic analytical tool to say what's happening? You know, if you can't get the opponent's data, how can you make a comparative analysis? So centralizing those type of things, making them a service level agreement for all of the teams, producing them, allows fans and, more important, content creators to delve in a little bit deeper. Yes, it will power fantasy football as well. And we're talking fantasy football with an app. We're talking daily games. We're talking weekly games. We're talking season games. We're talking games that are going to be free with a prize put up by the league. But we're also talking about you can have your private pools monetized. And, you know, if you want to put £10 into your fantasy football league or whatever it is, and you want a system so it's all done fairly and divvied out at the end, but you want to do that across your entire city, you know, all the supporters of the London whatevers can come together and have a fantasy pool and compete across your city. Who's the number one, you know, London whatever's fan? It's simply not possible right now. So a lot of people go, oh, well, why don't people come to Britball games? Well, I mean, who wants to see it? It's difficult to see a game where you're lucky to see as many completions as you are QB center exchange failures. You know, that's one thing. That's a bit rough. Then you don't even know how they played last week. So you turn up with your friends and find, is this team any good? I don't know. The website's not been updated since 2018. You know,
I can't just guess that. Just to give you an expansion on that, which is when we were live streaming games, we've turned up the games and not even had a roster.
Giving people a month's notice, a week's reminder.
We were asked to come to the game to stream it. We turn up, having asked them for a roster or some indication of, you know, some of the history about the team or who the coaches are, some stories to fill, you know, the half time with and whatever. We turned up at a game, not even had a roster. And we're like talking about number 27's, you know, running for 3 yards there. And it's ridiculous.
I've been there, Mick. I've been to games, and not that long ago, where you're lucky if you get a folded bit of paper when you go in with who you're playing. And then you get the rosters on, and you're watching the game, and you're thinking, that quarterback, he's pretty good. And you look at the roster sheet, half the numbers aren't matching the players.
He's not on there, question, Joe, about, you know, the fans. I mean, one of the things that we're considering when we're talking about the stadium, for instance, or where the teams are going to be, one of the predetermined things we're going to consider is how long will it take a fan to get to the stadium? Okay, in time and miles, you know. So what's acceptable? Because you've got to think about a day out for a fan. Okay, so if you go to Wembley, you're generally going to stay over. Unless you live in London, you're going to probably stay over. Yeah, so it's a 2 day thing. But the whole thing is you've got to pay for travel, you've got to pay for food, you've got to pay for a hotel, you've got to think about all these things. So, you know, we're not going to say, you know, so when we've looked at some stadia, there are certain places that are just within that area. If it's not central or central-ish, we're not considered it.
Yeah, it's part of the football experience. You don't want to have to drive there because you want to be able to get on the beers and have a tailgate.
Well, you may have to drive, but, you know, we asked this question, I think it was with the Breens when we were talking to them, you know, what would you say? You're a fan, Joe. You tell me, how far would you travel to watch a game?
To be honest with you, I mean, I'm 45 miles outside of London. And for me, that is like, you know, unless it was a special one, a special event up in Manchester, that's probably the furthest I would look to go. But for a very special event, but regularly 30 miles, maybe.
Yeah. So it's got to be, you know, sensible in time and because 30 miles in London is a long way. You know, so it's got to be sensible in time and also sensible in miles. So there's all those sort of things that we've considered. But on the fan experience, what we will be doing nearer the time is we will be inviting some fans to give us some feedback. Because, again, one of my frustrations is if you look at our numbers when we do a presentation, the 24 million people watch the NFL across Sky, Game Pass and BBC. How many of those go to British games and watch it? How many of them even know there's a British league? You know, if we can get just 1% of those, that's 250,000 fans.
And so to kind of tie that all up, what can people like us, listeners, people who just want to maybe get into it, what can they do to support the entire operation, I guess?
Yeah, so for right now, we're kind of on the cusp of a few things, and we're building... Look, we're just building an email list at the minute. We're saying, hey, we've got on our website, you've got a sign-up form. I'm interested as a player, I'm interested as a coach, I'm interested as a fan, I'm interested from a business perspective. And we're doing our best with Jen, our head of sort of relations, and getting through these and making people know when, you know, the players can know when they're going to have to try out, the fans can understand. That's step one. And that's the only really thing that's active right now. But by the end of the year, there will be the first crowdfunding opportunity. And so you will be able to either crowdfund the central company for the league, you know, and be a league shareholder and actually say, I own a piece of this. There will be crowdfunding for each of your local teams when they're announced. And it's only a small percentage, but, you know, you've seen the power of fan ownership in Barcelona. You've seen the power of fan ownership in Green Bay. It's something that's unique and it holds the team together. No one else in Europe's doing it. And you can have the share certificate on your wall and say, I am a sports team owner and I believe in this project. So that's, you know, the first wave of those are coming August, September, roughly. We are in the process of, in the discussions, early phases, but we're pretty confident about this, of bringing for the 2 years when we're not going to be able to play, of bringing an esports league instead and bringing people together and saying, you know what, you're an American football fan in the UK and you want to play Madden, you want to play FIFA, you want to play Rocket League against each other for prizes. Like, let's build up a community and get some banter going and find out which team's got the best FIFA, which, you know, you can already see Joe smiling. Joe's in.
Yeah, I was just right down my street.
As we grow into that the fantasy build-up will start with the support of the players over the time, the selection processes of the coaches. There's going to be some great content there where, depending on the exact models we use, there's a likely chance that there will be, you know, like a VIP type offer coming out soon where if you start joining the league, you will get a huge discount on season tickets when it comes around, etc. You know, it's going to be worth it because there's going to be exclusive input on team designs, team colours, team naming rights.
That's the one.
Coaches, you know, if you're a VIP member, you might be able to see some of the coaches' interviews and see some really unique content that you wouldn't get in any other sports league. One of the things we're going to be working on as well is player access. So I grew up in St. Helens playing rugby league, and at the end of a rugby league game, five or six of the players would go to the bar and have a pint, you know, like in the early 90s or whatever. And it wasn't unusual to meet a Paul Wellens or a Sean Long. You know, they were regular people that went to regular places because they earned a regular wage. Most professional sport in the UK has so far surpassed that you can't get anywhere near the blacked out window Land Rover. You can't get anywhere near the club or the VIP area they're in. They're working in a different circle to you. They live in a gated community. They run down the tunnel and discuss because they got subbed off. They mumble some words to the media. we're trying to bring back a bit of that 80s, 90s clubman vibe where we are going to give out our MVPs in the bar post-game with a group of fans right there live, that player meeting experience. And that's something that will be happening fairly soon. So as we look to say, where should we put our camps? We're going to crowdsource a lot of that information and say, hey, let's speak to the fans. Where would you want to see it? And let's actually make the player tryouts an event, you know, bring those people down here who want to see and want to see what the next wave of players is like. So they can put their eyes on them. And in day one, they can see what the difference is going to be. They can see players flying around. They can see the ball in the air. They can see coaches flying around the field, you know, and that's the sort of next 2 years plan. Now, how do you actually get involved right now? It's saying, hey, I'm a fan and I want to be on this list for when the next phase comes. But, you know, esports, exclusive content, building towards a VIP offer, building towards a crowdfunding platform is what the next 12 months looks like.
Oh, you've got me really excited and pumped up about that. Where can we go to find you? Like, have you got socials, websites, stuff like that?
Yeah, so our socials have just currently had a complete redesign, and everything is going to be at Team UKFL, so TEAMUKFL. But for now, the best place is UKFL.net. Our website is the best place because it's got the video, it's got the FAQs, it's got that sign-up link. Be the first to hear about it. You know, one of the things that people haven't considered, because not that many people think about investing, but as Tim mentioned, there's over 4,000 players in the league, and there's 4,000 registered for books. And yes, some have dual registered, but let's say there's 6,000, 7,000 players in the country. Like, at £100 each, you've got 150% of all of the money that BAFA raises every single year. I don't know, that's quite a big offer. But if you're getting equity and you've got a potential of dividends and you've got it knocked off your season tickets, it's quite a lot easier than you think. You know, so if you think, actually, I've got some shares, I've got an ISA, I'm paying off a mortgage, I put £50 a month into crypto, and I've got £50 a month, could I put it into something else? Actually, we have investment open right now at that level. And our early adopter deal is way better than the bigger investors are getting. So far, we've got 4 or 5 people signed up who we knew in advance and believed in us. And that's where most of our funding has come from so far, because we have built links in the community and we do know people and they've come and got invested in us. So even though crowdfunding's coming in September, which is very kind of structured and clinical, if people want to say, you know what, this is my jam, I could put £1,000 into this and be a shareholder, UKFL.net, sign up, tick the investment box, tick the fan box, tick the player box if you think you've got it. You can tick as many as you want and just get on those lists so that this year is going to move quite fast. You know, there's been a few difficult bits now as everyone's dealing with the COVID situation and the reopening, and you know, I got seconded at work because of it and became extremely busy for a period of 4 months. But those type of things are coming to an end, and the focus and the acceleration is going to happen as this consumer confidence comes back and we think about what are we going to do next. So UKFL.net.
I mean, it all sounds amazing to me. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking about it with us. We'll pump all your stuff out on our social medias as well to get the words out. Any final kind of things you want to say before we let you go?
Yeah, I mean, one. First of all, thanks for having us on and asking thoughtful questions. But the biggest one is, some of these things are going to sound, they are going to sound incredible, and they do sound incredible. We have thought this through. But if you've got something, I'm not just talking to you guys, I'm talking to your whole audience. If you've got something that in an hour's time doesn't sit right, or tomorrow you wake up and you think, how are they going to do that? Reach out to us and speak to us. You know, there's been loads of people who've brought up relevant questions, brought up relative critiques, and we've had a conversation with them. We've got time to phone people. We've got time to write emails to people. We want the community on our side. We believe in the community. We're doing it for the community. We're doing it for the players. And so if you've got a genuine concern that's going to make a difference to you in the way you perceive our league, we're here for you. So please get in touch. Get in touch on socials. Get in touch via email. Get in touch. Details are on the website, ukfl.net, and ask that question, because it's tough in the world of professional sport, because I'm a Manchester United fan. I can't find out anything. I know, it's a tough life, but I can't find out anything, you know? I can't email anyone at the club and find out why we haven't signed Jadon Sancho or whatever. It's not happening. It's not happening in a million years. Can you imagine actually emailing Glazer@united.com and trying to ask a question? Yeah. We're not that, and we're not at that level. And we don't pretend to be at that level. So please, if you've got something that doesn't sit right with you, speak to us. Because you never know, your question might be the question that makes the difference. Your input might be the thing that builds that relationship. We go, you know what, this person switched on. And actually, we've picked up people in the realm of social media. We've picked up people in the realm of marketing. We've picked up people in the realm of HR because they asked the tough questions. Now, we feel we were able to answer the tough questions, and that's where the trust and the relationship was formed. But we are here for you. We're here for your listeners. And we want to do this together.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, guys.
No worries.
Okay, thank you very much, John and Mick, for coming on. That was a super interesting chat. Just talk about a little bit of news in the league before we go. Major news that's come out is the New York Jets have traded Sam Darnold to the Carolina Panthers for a 6th round this year and a 2nd round and 4th round pick next year. So while the trade itself is pretty meager for what Sam Darnold could be, I guess it's pretty even on both sides, it mainly takes Panthers out of the top 5 quarterback race in the draft, which should shake things up.
Yeah, I like this. I think for Sam Darnold, it's important for him to get out of the Jets. I know he had a poor head coach, and that's what a lot of people are putting it down to. But when he came out the draft, he was so highly talented. And you just feel as if he has shown little glimpses. He just hasn't been able to have a full run at it. And I think going to Carolina, a team with a young head coach and all this exciting things, you know, the Panthers, they overachieved last year. So it shows that they are a franchise going in the right direction. I think it's a great move for him. I think it's a great move for the Panthers. Also, I think it's a really good move for the Jets as well, especially with Robert Saleh coming in. You know, you're a new head coach. I believe it's his first head coach job in the NFL. You're not going to want to have a QB controversy straight away if you go and pick a really good QB out of the draft, because straight away people are going to be like, right, how many games till Sam Darnold is second QB? So I just think it's a smart move all round, really.
Yeah, I've always said I still think Sam Darnold's a good quarterback. He was ruined by Adam Gase. So it's a fresh start for him. I think he's going to have a great career down in Carolina. And the Jets, as you said, Joe, Rob Saleh now has got his guy. He can pick his quarterback. He's not left with someone else's quarterback. He can do exactly what he wants with that number 2 pick. He's going to take Zach Wilson. 100% in our mock draft picked Zach Wilson to go to the Jets. So, yeah, it's a good trade for all rounds.
I saw some Jets fans joking that the Panthers are literally what the Jets could have been, because the Jets could have drafted. Matt Rhule was apparently a close choice for the Jets. They've got Sam Darnold, they've got Robbie Anderson, and they've got some other old Jets players, and it's just a little bit funny. But I mean, I'm in the opposite boat. I don't think Sam Darnold is anything special. I get that he was on a pretty shitty team. But I don't know, like you're saying, oh, he's got these highlights, but then you can look at most college quarterbacks and go, oh, they have got some highlights. Well, I don't know, I think he's not flashed, and I know he's on a shit team, but you still want to show on a shit team some really good things, and he just didn't show them. And I think that the Panthers are probably taking they're riding him out. Done Teddy Bridgewater last year, Sam Darnold this year. They'll ride it out and get one next year, I reckon.
It's low risk though as well. I mean, that's what's so positive about it, in my opinion. You look at what they traded for him. Like, of course, you've got the 2022 second and the fourth. So it is fairly high, but you're not really getting rid of too much draft capital. And as you know, me and Tim, we're more optimistic on Sam Darnold. If it goes our way, then they're onto a real winner.
Yeah, definitely.
When I first read it, didn't I? I thought it said the sixth overall pick, and I was like, what? Sam Darnold first?
It did seem like that, though, because that's their pick in the draft, isn't it? Are they the sixth pick? Or the sixth? I can't remember where they are. Yeah, but yeah, that completely threw me off as well.
I don't think there's any other major changes around the league. I know the Eagles picked up another Vikings linebacker, which is nice. But yeah, nothing too major, I don't think. Did see that nice little Peter Schrager mock draft with the Patriots moving up to fourth to take.
Yeah, taking the Falcons pick, and it was
Justin Fields.
Yeah, which is interesting, intriguing. I, to be honest with you, I really don't know. I can speculate all I want with what's going to happen in that draft, but I'm almost sure we're going quarterback first round. I just got that feeling. I think it's perfect timing.
He said in the explanation, like when I read it, I was like, because Peter Schrager's pretty clued in on everything, and he usually makes pretty educated guesses, and his draft was a bit odd, so it's definitely got something behind it. And then he said basically like, the Patriots don't lose much, so they don't regularly have losing seasons, so this is probably the highest up you're going to pick for a while, so why not spend the farm and get the quarterback?
Is also assuming that the 49ers do go for Mac Jones.
So let's put the clues together here. It's draft season, it's line of duty season. So someone was putting out rumours about Justin Fields, saying that he's got a bad work ethic, he's last in, first out. That was put out by someone who wants Justin Fields and wants him to drop to them. So Justin Fields is the second best quarterback in this draft. It's not Zach Wilson. Justin Fields is a better player than Zach Wilson. So could it be the Patriots who are trying to make him drop to move up?
Bill Belichick's got his Emperor's Palpatine hat on.
Yeah, are you trying to claim that the Patriots are playing dirty? Because, I mean, that's never happened before. So I'm not too sure where you got this from.
I am the league. but yeah, talking about the Taft's mock draft, that is all wrapped up now, isn't it, Tim?
No, we've got one pick left to do overnight. So it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are on the clock. And then the mock draft will be all over the socials. It's been fun. It's been really good doing it. We've had a lot of positive feedback, loads of people getting involved. Some teams more than others. Shout out to Miami Dolphins fans who, for both of Miami Dolphins' first picks, they had the most votes of anybody. They really, really got involved. So have a look at it. It's voted by you. We didn't pick any of the picks, even the one that was tied.
That's important to make everyone know before it comes out and you see that some people have dropped crazy amounts was not our choice.
Yeah.
And we're going to be having our friend Ollie come on and take a look at it as well. He's a bit of a draft head. But yeah, you'll be able to find that on all our social medias and our website. Where can they find them, Joe?
Yes. So our Twitter and Instagram is @TAFS_UK. Our Facebook is That American Football Show. As the boys noticed earlier, I did start a TikTok, which, to be honest with you, I've always hated the platform. I've never liked it, never understood it. But I put a video up of our top five draft picks that we've done, and it got like 70 views in an hour. So it's all, you know. So if you want to go and look at some awfully choreographed videos, go over there. On our TikTok, which is also TAFS_UK, if that's your thing.
Also, make sure you check out our friends at Lockdown Lids. They've got, I think, Jerry Rice and Troy Polamalu's on there right now, so some good grabs. Also, wherever you're listening, please do leave us some feedback. We do really like to hear from you guys and let us know where you're listening from so we can update our listeners' map. Anything else we want to say before we go, boys?
Enjoy Line of Duty on Sunday night, as Tim's mentioned it. Now it's in my head. Cracking TV series.
What is Line of Duty?
Oh, it's like the most popular TV show. Like, mate, it's nuts. It's about corrupt police officers.
I've been isolated for months and don't have social media.
It's like reading a crap book. The acting is terrible. I'm sorry. The acting in Lion of Duty is terrible, but the storyline is so addictive. It's unbelievable. And the story, if you start to see, you've got to start series one. All the way through, because all the stories are interlinked. It's brilliant.
It's top draw. Definitely worth the watch.
Well, on that note, thank you everyone for listening. Make sure you head over and check out our friends at EP Sports for all your NFL and equipment needs. And make sure you go watch Lion of Duty on Sunday.